I think we'll get started since we're approaching our new, it is now 10:35 officially. So I think we're going to get started. This is session A4, interim assessments and what to learn from them. So if you're in the wrong spot, we won't be hold it against you if you get up and leave right now. We're in the middle of the presentation, like I know this stuff, and we're pretty amenable to questions, so, you know, I'm okay with you interrupting, you know, in the presentation, asking a question. That's fine with me. So let's get going. Does this work? Well, maybe. Is it on? There's no on button. Oh, it is off. Turn it on, and that will work. Okay, so here's the official description. You have that, but I just want to introduce myself, and I'll let Margaret introduce herself. So my name is Jonathan Flukes. I'm a research, evaluation, and assessment consultant at Oakland Schools in Oakland County. So part of my role at the ISD is to support districts and our organization as a whole in using and understanding educational data, and I support a lot of the assessment products, whether it's making sense of them, whether it's the actual assessments they use or the tools they use to deliver or analyze those assessments. That's kind of my big role at the ISD, and I'll let Margaret, my co-presenter, introduce herself. And why there's two different districts listed?
Yeah, so my name's Margaret Hendrickson. When Jonathan and I chose to do something together, I was employed by West Bloomfield School District as the Math Science Assessment Coordinator. And the story I'll share today is my experience in West Bloomfield. But since that time, as of January 13th, almost a month, I am now the Director of Curriculum Instruction Assessment in Farmington Public Schools. So now I'm just pretending. Take it till you make it right now in a new job, and my brain is exploding with learning a whole new system and developing that picture in pieces. So hopefully I can be eloquent today about my time in West Bloomfield, and I've been thinking about my time in West Bloomfield and how that can help me in my new role in working with interim assessments in Farmington.
So we want to get a chance just to get at least to help us understand kind of who's in the room here, so we get a chance to make sure we clearly explain things or make sure we kind of deliver the message in a way that is best in your context. So I want to at least get a chance for us to find out who's in the room. You don't have to say your name, but just kind of like the roles that you occupy. So can you raise your hand if you teach or lead at a building level? Okay, so we have a fair amount there. How about at a school district level? Are you in some capacity at a school district level, central office? Okay. Out there. How about at an ISD or a service agency? Okay. And how about a vendor or a assessment provider, whatever you want, and something that doesn't fit the first three? All right, a few of those in there. Okay, so we have a good mix there. So we have building, district, service agencies. We have, you know, vendors here. So that's good. All right. So I'm going to kind of set the stage for what we're going to talk about over the next hour and 10 minutes now, I think. So first, I'm going to set the stage a bit in terms of defining interim assessments, and you'll find out that there isn't necessarily a clear definition, so we're going to kind of work through that. We'll talk about where they might fit in a district assessment system, and you'll kind of get Margaret's perspective on how they fit in the case of West Bloomfield. And she's going to talk specifically about how they she was able to fit those and the district was able to fit those within their system. And then we're going to, I forgot a space there when I edited it last night, so questions two is actually supposed to be two separate words. That's not a different language. We hope this will at least inform you and kind of help bring some questions back to you in your context, whether it's at the building level, the district level, or serving other folks in whatever capacity you serve them. So a little bit about definitions. Interim assessments, or sometimes... That's a common term. So I'll kind of interchange the different terminology, so don't call me out. I mean, because we don't have call true definitions, I might say IAs or interim assessments or benchmarks. So some people call them interim assessments. Benchmark assessments or interim / benchmark assessments. And then a fairly new one that I came across, long cycle formative assessments. That actually comes from some of the big folks who talk about formative assessment. So that's not a term I developed, but That's something I have heard recently to talk about. These things that really aren't these end-of-year state-level assessments, and that's not day-to-day classroom-level assessments, somewhere in between, interim. Okay, so interim kind of works kind of nicely in that sense. But you kind of get the sense for long cycle. Like, it's something not close to, very close to the instruction. It's a little bit further away from the instruction, but not yet like an end-of-year summative necessarily assessment. So some of you might call out me and say, wait a second, you just said formative assessments. That's wrong. It's a process. Yes, so maybe if you thought that, that's more true to the essence of what formative assessment is. So if you like folks like Margaret Heritage and Dylan William and those folks, they have an awesome organization that they're a part of, the FAST-SCAS, the Formative Assessment for Students and Teachers, State Collaborative on Assessment and Student Standards. So that's the FAST-SCAS. And this is their kind of ever-evolving definition. So it's kind of changed over the last few years and added a little bit more nuance to it. But in general, it's a planned, ongoing process that happens during learning. So that's where folks sometimes have a hard time saying that formative assessment is a test or a thing. So that's why sometimes it made me a little bit kind of itchy on the inside when I saw long cycle formative assessments, because of what I know about how folks talk about what good formative assessment is. And so I just want to at least put that out there, that I'm acknowledging that there are different definitions, and that it really comes down to what you, at the core, what is it you're looking for in an assessment system. So essentially, I don't care what you call it. And that's actually, I got this from, I was inspired by Dylan William at a recent conference, where he basically said, it doesn't matter what you call it, whether it's a long cycle formative assessment, whether it's a benchmark, an interim, or whatever it is, formative assessment, doesn't matter what you call it. Really, it's about purpose. Oh, I was supposed to think about pause for laughter. So did you get the porpoise purpose? See, I had to force you to laugh. That's true. It's about your purpose. So it doesn't matter what you call the thing. It's like, what is it that you want this thing to do? It lives kind of in the middle of close to instruction and in between end of year kind of big summative. So it's in the middle. So what is it that you want out of that middle piece is really the core. So within the context of, and I added this last night, within your context, mm-hmm. And in the context of good assessment practices, and a balanced system. In your context, it's going to be different whether you're in West Bloomfield or Farmington, or whether you're in a neighboring district, or, you know, it's very different. Even if, you know, it seems like you're the same on the outside, it's very different depending on where you are. So this is kind of our working definition that we kind of are using this right now in terms of what the interim is doing in West Bloomfield's context. So something that's administered at different intervals between instruction, typically 2 to 3 times per year, to show evidence of student learning for longer-term instructional planning. So there's nothing there about day-to-day, minute-by-minute type of alterations of instruction to assess students' minute-by-minute learning. It's more about long-cycle information gathering. So let's go back to that porpoise again. So let's talk a little bit about the purpose of interim assessment. So some of it, you might not know why these things are a part of your district assessment system. Maybe you stepped into a role in your district and it was just there. Or maybe you were part of, maybe there's external reasons why these things are there in the system. So there was a time where there was an assessment reimbursement grant that the state gave money to districts that gave these kind of things, and you got reimbursed for that money. So maybe you said, hey, this is a chance for us to put another piece into our system. We now have money to cover it. It's there. And then, by the way, they took it away this year. So maybe you've got this thing there that's not being funded anymore, and you're like, wait a second. We put it there because they give us money. Did we really have a true purpose or reason why we want it there? And maybe you needed something for teacher evaluations. Maybe you needed something that had some sort of growth piece. And maybe there were some things out there that had their interim assessment, they had a growth piece, and you needed that for your teacher evaluation, so you added this piece to it to do that. Or maybe it was to meet Read by Grade 3 law. You needed some sort of initial assessment, and this kind of fit the bill, but it also did other things. So maybe there's other external reasons why you have your interim assessment in your system right now. Or just maybe because it's always been there. You can't exactly explain it, but it just seems like there's always been there, and it's just yeah, there's so much inertia that you can't really do anything about it. And this is actually an interesting quote from some of these folks that think a lot about interim assessment, formative assessment. And so what does this make you think when you read this? So it's not necessary, right? So yes, if you don't do anything else, yeah, it's probably not going to do you any good. If you just throw something at kids and don't do anything with it, it's probably not going to make much of a difference. If there's no plan or purpose behind it, if there's nothing that's saying this is our plan, this is how we're going to use the information, and this is what we're going to do about it, yeah, it's probably not going to do you any good. So the evidence they have is that it's not really good because people typically haven't done a very good job of making sense of the data and doing something with it. So it doesn't mean necessarily that you should throw out your interim assessments just because the evidence isn't there necessarily in the research base. But to be, I'm kind of trying to invite you to be more of an informed consumer about the products, figuring out what your needs are as a district. And then really you need to know that assessments are designed for a specific purpose. So not every interim assessment is the same. And it doesn't always do the same thing. So just know that going in that they can be very different. So be very critical consumers when you are thinking about and evaluating your current system or looking at something else that you might need to fit the purpose that you've identified. So there's some key questions that you might want to ask about your assessment system, specifically of your interim assessment. So kind of going to that purpose, so what is it that you want to learn from this assessment? We kind of defined it in West Bloomfield's context, so you kind of need to think about what is it that you want to have in this interim system. What do you want to learn from the assessment? Who's going to use that information? Who are the primary consumers of that? Are they students? Are they teachers? Are they parents? Are they district staff? Are they building level staff? Who's going to use the information and for what purposes to answer that question of what they want to learn? What action steps will we be taking as a result? So what are you going to do with it? So kind of going back to that research question about, yeah, if you just plop it there, there's no evidence that just having them, the existence of them, doesn't do any good. You've got to make some, you have to have clear action steps on how you're going to use the information. And what supports or professional learning are available to ensure that those steps you've identified are taken appropriately. So how are you going to make sure that everyone has the right tools in their toolkit, whether it's teachers and principals, do they know what to do with the information and do it appropriately? And then how will that impact student learning? It might not impact it directly, because again, this is kind of far away from where the instruction happens. So how is this going to impact student learning? Maybe it's going to impact it in the terms of you're going to help improve your instructional programs. And that's going to then indirectly, hopefully, impact student learning. So maybe it's not a direct. So you need to kind of have a model of how it's going to affect and change learning in your context. And these like 3 and 4 here really are kind of, this is supposed to be a nice little soft orange around it. It doesn't show up on the screen. So like 3 and 4 are kind of assessment and literacy type things. So there's got to be some work maybe that happens here so that people know what kinds of actions to take that are appropriate, and then if they need support in doing those things. So in addition to making a plan, the folks need in your district that are using the information need to have a little bit of support to do those things that are appropriate. So I didn't get out my handouts here, so I'm going to talk through this as I dig through my bag so eloquently. Sure. I've got them clipped here. I made about 35, or I made about 40 of these, so this should cover the lot. So this is a handout that our wonderful folks at the Michigan Assessment Consortium pulled together. And by the way, MichiganAssessmentConsortium.org, if you haven't come across their website. There's a few different interim assessment short readings that I would definitely I may have put them on the resource slide at the end of this presentation. Definitely read those. A couple different resources there. This one I pulled out. This is a third one. This is kind of a nice breakdown that has potential purposes as well as characteristics of different kinds of interim assessments. This resource is not necessarily true of all interim assessments. This isn't like a list that says, here's what an interim assessment can do, and it can do all of those things. It's a nice kind of list of what kinds of things might these different tools do. You also need to acknowledge that sometimes your interim assessment vendors might bundle their assessments with other products. So this is just mainly talking about the assessment. So I'm not talking about things they might have bundled with it that have instructional pieces or practices or shorter cycle assessments. We're talking more about kind of the longer cycle interim assessments. And there is a little caveat from the authors that this table doesn't, it's not an overview. I mean, it's just an overview, so it's not exactly a checklist of, yes, it needs to have this, 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 and this. It's more of a, hey, here are some things that might be important to look at as you're thinking about choosing or evaluating your own interim assessment system. What I want you to do, so I don't want you to read this straight through right now as I walk past the blinding light. I want you to take a look at it, but I want you just to read the intro and the headings, so kind of those dark things, because they talk about different types of interim assessment. I want you to read those, and I want you just to read that left column, the one that says assessment purpose. So I just want you to go through, take a couple minutes, read through that first column and the headings. So I'll give you like a minute to read through those. So as you're reading that column, you may have done this mentally, but maybe if you have a little writing utensil, maybe you can do this mentally. Maybe put a check in the box on that left-hand side, and you can do more than one check out of maybe what you hope to have or might want out of an interim assessment. What are the things that you might need? So it's kind of like an introductory conversation you might need to have at a grander scale in your context as you think about what is it we want out of a system. So can maybe do that first step of, those purposes might match what we need. So maybe go through again, either reread it or put a check next to, because I want you to then, I'm going to have you talk about some of those things with a shoulder partner. So maybe go through and just check some of the purposes that you lifted up. And maybe if there's a purpose there that you want, jot one down that's not there. So maybe you're like, I don't see any purposes here. This is what we need. Make a little short note on here's what we're looking for. So take about 30 seconds to a minute and identify your main purposes. What I want you to do now is, starting with the things that you checked, I want you to read the essential characteristics. So now go to the ones you checked and say, okay, this is the purpose that matches what I think I might need. Read those essential characteristics and kind of get a sense for what are those things you might look for in an assessment that maybe matches some of the purposes you're looking for. Thank you.
and sit and just discuss it.
Let's just get time to discuss it, like what were some things that we want to do. Yeah, I think doing all right. The charts won't work.
Why don't you turn with one or two people near you and just discuss some of the things that you either checked or some of the things you thought were important or kind of new learnings for you. So kind of a general discussion about either see if there's any matches to the purposes or some questions you had, some things that are important. Kind of it's all open for discussion. I'd like to invite you to finish your last thought with your partners, and we'll get back there in about 30 seconds and kind of see what you talked about. Thank you. Would anyone like to share some of the major things that you discussed with your partners? Would anyone like to share some of the things you've talked about or some of the things that came up in your conversation? Yeah.
It was interesting because the people on both sides of me answered with one that they checked off just on the front of the page. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I checked the both of the same ones.
Right.
So we were on the same page, which was great. And we talked about being able to provide feedback as to where the gaps are. Mm-hmm. And to be able to motivate and provide feedback to students about their learning.
Okay.
And how it's hard to drive students and adults for that matter to test and why and just the monotony of it sometimes.
Right.
So those were important to us.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone else feel at least a sense of commonality in your discussions? Was it a lot of common things checked or did you have some differences? Okay, so prediction was one of the pieces. Okay.
We talked about, I know with us, our interim assessment window closes today.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we were to, that data, if we were to look at that data to see if we were to take the MSTEP today, what our results would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And the urgency of what needs to be done, because technically we don't have a lot of time before we get actually time to take the MSTEP.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe about a good 8 weeks of instruction before we actually have to take it. So
mm-hmm.
We all kind of are on the same page.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just a couple thoughts within your list. On the feedback note, yes, but limited.
Mm-hmm.
Certain constraints. There are definitely limitations on that. Locally, we definitely use it for program eval,
mm-hmm.
educator eval. I'm a little surprised. I did not see the word growth in this document.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I added growth.
Yep.
Because that's our story.
Yeah.
And probably some of your story as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this document, I think, is based from an article from probably 10 years ago that a couple researchers thought a lot about interim. So I wonder if maybe they weren't, that wasn't part of the field at that point to where it was a big, or maybe they're acknowledging, I don't know. Maybe that was a way, I'd have to reread it to see if there was a mention of it and acknowledge that it's not included here because of X, Y, and Z, or if it just wasn't addressed at all. Anyone else have growth as something that they wrote in? Or at least it came up in a discussion? There's a couple of the hands there. Yep. Yeah.
We discussed vertical and horizontal alignment of standards and how we can ensure that counter-pacing and lesson planning are
So what is critical then out of an interim assessment if you're talking about standards and alignment? What's one of the things that you're going to need to look for in the assessment then? What do you think?
Mastery of
Content. Yeah, like ensuring that this tool you're saying is measuring the standards that you're looking for alignment to. So you need to ensure that, I can be confident that I'm assessing what I think I'm assessing and making sure that it aligns well with what you want to get. So that's one of those alignment pieces of your tool, because your tool needs to match the purpose.
And then also mentioning how that can be used as a program evaluation, like if we're using MESA, is MESA really teaching
mm-hmm.
what we want, and then are we able to see
mm-hmm.
that reflected in our interim assessments
right.
as well.
anyone check mark prerequisite skills? That was the only one we didn't check mark. Uh-huh. And I kind of summarized and collapsed what was on that sheet up here. Okay.
All right, thank you.
So let's change the...
I'll give you the lapel and you can be the official speaker of record now.
I know that light is like very blinding. I noticed in this little assessment here that pretty much from here over is NWEA. And that is the assessment tool that West Bloomfield's been using and Farmington uses. I also see iReady, I see STAR, I see Scantron, I see Dibbles, Audience, is that the right one? Inspect, Acadience, thank you.
The new Dibbles,
okay. And so ExactPath, those are other tools, but overwhelmingly in the room, we're seeing NWEA, and there's no intimidation factor that an NWEA person is in the room today who works with West Bloomfield and Farmington. So it'll be interesting to see what she thinks of what I have to say. I don't get paid anything from NWEA. You know, when West Bloomfield started on this, I'll tell you, there was a knee-jerk reaction. And as the assessment coordinator, there had been some work happening amongst literacy folks about what we were going to do and what tool we were going to use to really support some of that literacy and the expectations from the state. We had some teacher groups get together. We kind of had a rubric of what we were looking for. And then a decision kind of got made, literally, 2 weeks before school started. And so it was go, Margaret, get test administration in place within 2 weeks of start of school, which means it's all of the infrastructure, the technology, the student information system connections, all of that, as well as getting test administration up. So when we launched NWEA, it had nothing to do with student learning and how are we going to support teachers. It was all about test administration. And I had to do that in a very short period of time, of which NWEA will say was very responsive. But ultimately, once we get through that test administration place, that first round, we had to think about how was this tool, this assessment, going to be used? And so how was it going to enhance our data conversations? Because we were wanting to make sure we had accessible relative data, multi-tiers of data sources, some of which we wanted embedded in the learning, so embedded in your instructional materials, like your common assessments, as well as things that were distanced from the instructional process, like MSTEP and NWEA in this case. And so we were working a lot on how are we talking about data in the system. We were working a lot on how do we visualize data. We had just been a couple years into using Illuminate. So the district, we had already been asking ourselves what were the various data points we wanted, what were our ways of talking and visualizing the data. We weren't, exemplary yet with that, but we were in a growth place for those. And we were starting to think about data mapping, like what data occurs when and for what purpose and by who would talk about it. Because we wanted to engage all stakeholders in some data-driven decisions, as well as creating a data narrative for ourselves. At the district level, at the building level, and at the classroom level, what's our data narrative look like, and depending on the stakeholders for each of those. But fundamentally, we wanted to, in some ways, inform classroom instruction and intervention, as well as progress monitor school and district improvement. And by doing that, we wanted to look at growth and performance for kids. So that was the frame we were looking in. I did not know much about NWEA when we literally started to do test administration. But I did know that we had had an active data protocol in the district about how do we talk about data. Littman Wellman, this is the one supported by MDE, and they have resources on the MDE website about how do we start a conversation by activating and engaging our inquiry. Like, what questions do we want to ask? What predictions do we have? How do we sit and look at data and only talk about the data and not draw conclusions yet? And then how do we then get to a place where we look at patterns and trends and get into causal category? So we started to roll out almost like 8 years ago, really trying to get a common language at the PLC level, building level, and district level, no matter what data you look at, are you using these three phases? Whether you're looking at enrollment data, whether you're looking at student perception data or parent perception data, or making observations in classrooms, how do we use this process to help us have a good, healthy conversation? So with that, always comes a one-pager of some sort. So we ended up coming up with our one-pager of how do we move forward with data based on Lippmann-Wellman. So we just pulled quotes and things out of that book and kind of put it in our own form so we could have a table topper that helped us have conversations. And so when the interim came into place and we added that, because we had nothing like that prior, we were using it as a non-embedded assessment. In other words, it was data that was independent of the instructional model or the instructional cycle. And that was done 3 times a year, the large cycles. And we were using it for 2 purposes, to look at growth at individual and system level. So how is an individual student growing? How is a building growing? How is a grade level growing? How is the district growing? So based on where kids start at the beginning of the year, how much growth are we seeing? Which is what NWEA tries to support doing. But what NWEA also provided us, which I don't know if it was an original plan in our choice, is they have what they call ready-to-learn statements. So when you take the NWEA, not only does it tell you your growth, kind of where you're ranking relative to other kids, it also tells you, based on these questions and what we know about skills connected to standards, what are some ready-to-learn statements? So that could help with core instruction and intervention planning. So we kind of knew that. This is year 3 in West Bloomfield of using NWEA. And I think in Farmington, we're more than that in to using NWEA. I didn't know anything. That was a good thing, because I was somewhat one step ahead of the people in the organization, which meant I had to decide what did I have to learn first, what did they had to learn first, what did I get to learn second, what did they learn second. So none of this was in a really clean implementation plan that I wrote. I think I was intentional along the way, but didn't plan the intentionality. I kind of figured it out as I went along. So there's something to be said about building the bridge as you walk on it. As long as you're very clear with letting everyone know you're building the bridge as you walk on it, and so they don't set too high expectations for themselves, and you don't have too high expectations of them. And so one of the first things I did was try to make sense of what's RIT, what's percentile rank, what are these overall numbers that NWEA gives me. And so kind of that first year, I played with some templates of, in a one-pager, how do I use this percentile rank or these RITs or these percent METs to display our story? So I've been playing with using Illuminate as well as some good old Google Doc for tables, is how do we look at the system level and building level and grade level about percent met and that projection for proficiency. So I wanted to come up with templates that we use every year. But I didn't know what my templates were going to look like until I knew what the data was within NWEA, because that was very new. So what were my district templates? What was the building templates? And what was the grade level templates? What was the easy way to summarize the narrative with these big numbers, these RITs and these percent METs, right? Numbers don't mean anything until you look into them. So how was I going to organize these numbers? So I tried to figure out templates for progress monitoring student growth as well as system scale growth. So another piece, because I knew I wanted to use this for growth, so I had to come up with some templates to make sense of that data. But then I also wanted it to get into the classroom level. That didn't happen probably effectively until year 3. We needed to teach teachers how to use these ready-to-learn statements within NWEA. So NWEA gives us ready-to-learn statements, and so we wanted to find a way to help this impact the classroom. You can use your interim assessments to do these broad data narratives for the system and the building level. So it's kind of this progress monitoring tool. And you could choose to only use it for that, But we wanted it to get into the classroom level and allow it to impact instruction, even though the assessment itself isn't embedded in the instructional model. So you're coming up on a unit on informational text. You know that it's going to cover these standards. With an NWEA, you can kind of look up those standards and say, what are kids ready to learn relative to the standard? What are some skills they have? So figure out what your unit's going to cover. Figure out where most of your kids are on the learning continuum. If most of your kids are just shy of that learning target, how are you going to shift core instruction to make use of those ready to learn statements? Then if you've got kids that got ready to learn statements that are really far from the target, which means they've got some skills that they need to start building to be able to access that content, how am I going to do intervention with that group? So how am I going to support remediation to target so they can have access to core instruction? And then I have some kids that have ready to learn statements beyond my target. They've got other skills they're ready to learn, so that's my enrichment. So one, we wanted to find ways to just talk about the numbers. What does RIT mean? What does percentile rank mean? Whatever those numbers might be in whatever your system is. Then we tried to make sense ourselves of, okay, how do I use it for core instruction? And that's where ready to learn statements happened. Okay? So I wanted to show you this slide because part of my rollout was about making sense of numbers at all the levels. How do people make sense of the numbers? Right? Versus the information that gets down to classroom level. Okay? Take a moment, jot down whatever's in your head. Think about this idea of kind of dashboarding your numbers. And think about this idea of how do you take it and make it impact classroom instruction if that's where you want it to be. Before I get into telling the story, the more details, your interim assessments have the potential to be data rich, creating hoarding data, which means we don't end up using it. So when I got and looked at NWEA, I said, holy, there's a lot of shit on these reports. There are a lot of numbers, and there's ways I can misuse the numbers, and there are ways I can use the numbers correctly. And there were a lot of arguments over what RIT mid did or did not mean, or what percentile rank meant in winter, fall, and spring, and maybe this winter, whatever. So there's all these misconceptions that I continually had to unwrite and re-message. So it had the potential to only be something we had kids do so that the board got numbers. School improvement got numbers. The Title I program eval got numbers, right? Those are important things. We need that data. But if you want to have it impact instruction, you had to think a little bit further than that. So we had to think about NWEA, so think whatever you're using, and think about what your data chunks are. RIT percentile rank was one data chunk. What does it tell us? What conversations can you have about that? Growth percentile ranks and percent METs is another data point within NWEA. It's another little chunk. Then there's this like learning continuum chunk. So think whatever your data system is, there's layers of numbers and words that come out of that system. So we had to chunk it and be very specific about our conversations, because if you try to talk about it all at one time, you don't get anywhere. And your data meetings become all about making sense of this data or talking about random stuff, and you don't get to a place of action. So we really were trying to chunk our data. I was trying to figure it out. Again, I was one step ahead. So I tried to write up some bullet points now that I look back on 3 years about what I did. First, I had to learn, and when I say I mean those of us that were kind of supporting the conversation, so it wasn't just the I, it was the other coordinators and myself. We had to really figure out what RIT percentile, growth percentile, and percent MET meant, what those meant. Whatever the numbers are, these are numbers that come out of NWEA. So think about the numbers that come out of your system. What do they mean? So in knowing that, I had to start learning in my head, then what could the data conversation be around that number and that number and that number? So I had to think about how to chunk my conversations and what did those data conversations have to look like and sound like. And while I did that, I tried to make these templates for the data dashboard. You know, how is I going to compile RIT numbers or percentile ranks? I will tell you, when I started, I didn't know that I needed to do that first and do this. It just kind of happened. Simply because as I was trying to learn what they mean, I was explaining to teachers what they mean. And then they're like, oh, how do I have a conversation about this? I'm like, I'll get back to you. And then I started thinking about, if I wanted a PLC to have a conversation around RIT, what does that look like and sound like? I had to get very specific. My general data protocol didn't matter. Well, it mattered, three phases, but I had to think about my data protocol specific to this data. Thank you for nodding in the back. You're like giving me so much reinforcement today. Thank you. The affirmation's wonderful. Thank you. And so I, over time, had to make, what are the data conversations on each piece? What are the data dashboards on each piece? And I'm in year three, and those things got better. Okay. So I knew I had to layer. Remember I told you I was like one step ahead? Year one, all we did was administer the test, which is a feat in and of itself, especially when NWA goes down nationwide. But so all I did year one was, can you administer the test, and can we start teaching you what RIT, percentile rank, and MET growth meant? Just the numbers. So all I did with staff was PD and wrote what the numbers meant. I didn't tell them how to do it in their PLC, what conversations to have at the building. Year one was test administration, and can we start making sense of these numbers in the reports coming out? It was really basic. And I told them that was my expectation. Year two, I took Nate's the same numbers, whatever your numbers are for your assessment system, and I said, let's start having some real conversation. But I started the conversation around the broad stuff around growth. How are you seeing growth with these numbers? So what are the numbers? How are you seeing growth with those numbers? So this was just progress monitoring, right? Just let teachers see that year one into year two. I'm not getting into the classroom yet. I'm just saying, do we know what these numbers are that come out of my system and what they mean? Okay. Then I started dabbling with some PLCs that are saying, how is this affecting my instruction? So I was into some PLCs and I started to like fake it till I make it, and I started to pretend to make conversations around the data, and all of a sudden I noticed some things clicked with kids, and when I saw the real data, it clicked with me. Because NWA can give you, or whatever your assessment system, can give you all these report templates, but you really don't know what that looks like and sounds like as a conversation. So year three was, and that's this year, is this. There's a lot of pressure around the assessment. So there's a lot of pressure on your shoulders to use everything it has right away. But that overwhelms your brain, teacher brain, and you don't have the time to build the scaffolds and supports. So by first knowing what the numbers meant and sharing that with stakeholders, then saying, how do we talk about RIT for growth, et cetera? So year one, year two, and year three kind of grew naturally. Part of that came out of circumstance because I didn't have enough time with teachers to do it all at one time. I needed to learn what the data looked like in real classroom contexts. And so this kind of came out naturally. So every year I told teachers, this is our focus. Every year I told teachers, this is our focus, and administrators. And then year three, this is our focus. Had there been staff members that went full hog forward? Yes, that's fine. Let some people run with it. Did they make some mistakes on how they interpreted the data? Yeah. Did I have to go back and tweak? Yeah. But it's okay to have your early adopters that want to run with it, right? As long as you tell them, you know you're going a little bit farther than I'm expecting right now, because teachers will always do that, no matter what your rollout is. But what was nice is because I had started with just what the numbers meant and some basic templates, then the board saw something. Board wants to see immediate, right? Building principals want to see immediate. We each year did different PD. So we had rotating groups of teachers that we did the basic number PD with. Then that's that first year. So all of our teachers got trained in small group cohorts that first year and just what the numbers meant. Year two, we did some early release days and there was templated PD on how to use the learning continuum. And say, dabble with this. Okay. Then year three, which is this year, we now have PLC leaders. So we're training some teacher leaders that then in their building are really making sure these conversations are happening well. Are we there yet? No, but that's their intent. So now we're taking key teachers as teacher leaders to help them have the conversations within PLCs so it affects the classroom. Sorry. So what are the numbers? What conversations can you have about the numbers? How could you template it so you're capturing those numbers? How are you layering the data look over time? Start with some basic numbers and then get deeper. Are you setting expectations each year about how we should or what should we be doing with it so that people know what the expectations are? Are you getting nested in the data conversations so you know what kind of gets tripped up in the data conversations, what seems to work well and not well, so that you can ultimately create supports for talking about the data? So where I was at this year in year three, I've now moved to Farmington, is to say that first meeting at the beginning of the year when we're just looking at initial writs or whatever that first number you get from your system, what is that PLC conversation? Here are the 3 to 4 questions, and here's the report you look at. These, because PLC times an hour. Sometimes 20 minutes, depending on, so something simple. Now, we have another set of data a little bit later in the year that we want to talk about growth, some growth data, or whatever the next data point is your system pulls out. What are the 3 to 4 questions that they're going to ask? So I'm trying right now, although I've left, is to say, as a PLC, here's NWEA. Here are the 3 types of conversations you have in NWEA, and here are your basic questions to help take you through the protocol. Because when I was just teaching them about the numbers and how to use it generally, they didn't know what that looked like as terms of facilitating a conversation. Right? And this has now led us into data mapping at our PLCs. So what do you talk about in the fall, what do you talk about in the winter in your PLC, what do you talk about in the spring that are like MSTEP or FNP or NWEA, or what writing samples do you bring in? So what happens is teachers become so focused on NWEA, they forget to pair it with their other data points. Because NWEA does not tell you what standards kids are proficient in. It's not an achievement assessment. It's just telling you what kids are ready to learn. So I need them looking at their other data. So that's now what we're starting to think about, is how do you pair your NWEA? I need you to look at your writing samples. I need you to look at this. I need you to look at this. So when do I need you to look at your NWEA and for what purpose? And the story kind of continues from here.
Mario, can you talk about how that understanding at the teacher level of the purpose and appropriate expectations of said tools have evolved over the last 3 years?
I think year one, I probably wasn't as clear because we were like, get test administered. Okay, you're going to spit out some reports. And it wasn't very clear. And we kind of told them it was going to be muddy and just do what you can with it. year two, one of the things I think got better at in my 10 years of my job is at the beginning of the year setting, here's the communication around NWA this year. Kind of layered it with everything, math, science, NWA. Our goal this year is make it explicit and written. Then when I met with teacher groups, I restated, here's our goal this year. If you're going here, you're going a little bit beyond what I'm expecting you to do right now. If you haven't hit here, you're a little bit not quite there. So how do we grow it there? It was saying the same thing over and over at different work groups and paralleling that with my conversations with admin. I don't know if I answered that question, but... So assessment itself doesn't change student performance. If you use the data strategically, it can. So time is needed to get to know the data. We have to scaffold supporting the conversations. We have to understand the connection between the assessment and instructional planning. I don't let teachers go into looking at their learning continuum with sixth grade math and say, oh, kids have ready to learn statements on this geometry. We now have to add 3 months of geometry and change our whole scope and sequence. NWA does not assess your grade level standards. So you got to know what your assessment assesses. If you want to do program evaluation and you want to monitor your curriculum, NWA is not going to do that. Other assessments might. PSAT does not help you monitor your curriculum. Okay? So you got to know what it's used for. And so I have to steer teachers away from emphasizing something more or less based on NWEA, because that's not what NWEA is designed to do. Plus, sometimes their ready to learn statements are stuff you're not doing till the end of the year. Don't worry about doing it before the winter assessment, because it's already naturally in our pacing. So you got to make sure you really understand the connection between assessment, instruction, and your curriculum, or we end up misusing MSTEP you can't use for alignment. They don't assess all of the standards, right? Capacity of the system with the instructional model and content knowledge. I'll tell you, this is an important point when I think about like literacy and teachers using NWA for literacy or math or whatever it is. Unless you have already a good instructional model that it fits into, like what instruction intervention should look like, and teachers don't have good literacy knowledge or math knowledge, the data is meaningless. So, you need time to get to know your data. You need to scaffold the conversations over time so you're growing the system. The bigger your system, the more time you need because your access to teachers is more challenging and administrators. But you have to know how assessment can or cannot connect to your instruction and curriculum. But fundamentally, if you haven't built capacity in your teachers alongside about what good instruction and what the content is, using the data is not going to mean anything. So we've been doing a lot of work with core instruction in West Bloomfield. Yes, on intervention, but largely core instruction. Yeah.
It seems to be that it's essential to have somebody at your capacity within the district to work throughout the district with something.
It helps.
One of the things that we struggle with personally is the continuity of testing and what we're doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it seems to be because that's the thing to do right now.
Yep.
In each individual building, I'm high school principal, and we're supposed to be our own curriculum director. We're supposed to be our own testing coordinator.
Are you only one high school?
We're only one high school, yeah. Which is all fine, but we land in the spot we did in year one, where we do it, we get it done, we do it well so that we're doing all things the state of Michigan says we're supposed to do. But then it kind of stops there for the most part.
And that is implementation on anything in most districts. Is year one gets it in. Implementation makes it last. And if I'll tell you, West Bloomfield's lucky because we had a small central office teacher leadership, and I focused on this in addition to math and science, and there's a lot of stuff I could have done better with NWA if I was full-time assessment. But what built it for me was the collaboration. So what's nice about NWA, it's a common language no matter what grade level you're at. So how do you, within whatever size of your system is, have someone whose focus is thinking about this at certain times of the year. So as building principals, if you are your curriculum coordinators, right, you building principals is thinking about what are your collaboration structures and what are the three big things we're doing as a whole district and how what are we learning from each of us on NWA? Because I'll be honest, I think I learned a lot by just collaborating with the building administrators on this. It wasn't a Margaret only. I was there making sure it happened, but everything wasn't about my learning only. I did that with people. So it's just figuring out how, based on your resources and based on your priorities for that year and the next year and the next year, is how do we as leaders commit to it? Because we're committing a lot of dollars, which means we have to commit time, which means how many initiatives are we taking on? And this is another PD somewhere, right? How many initiatives do we take on? But being okay with saying, what are we growing it this year? Because part of it is we might have five initiatives, all five are important, but we're expecting to get this far in all five year one, where really the expectation is here. Because a lot of our implementation problems is how fast we try to go too soon. And so that's one statement I would make.
And that's one of the things, appropriate expectations for where we're at is one thing that I try to push. Second year high school principal, and to be able to take on those initiatives, five looks more like 10, and there's pressure to achieve all 10 of those, but we don't do any of them well, per se. So I really try to gain focus in one or two areas, which also, which are at the building level, for immediate improvement, so that people feel good about it and push them even more. Testing's not one of those first two, so how do I keep the testing involved?
Correct. And that's the challenge, because I'll tell you, we pulled back on NWA at the high school, and there were reasons why we did that. For our context, middle school we still use it, K-5 we still use it.
That's where we are now. K, we use it. We don't use it in the high school. Mm-hmm. There's some conversations to why or why not.
Mark, can you go back to one slide? So, I'm sorry, kid. What was your name?
Mike.
So Mike, I think, brought up some interesting points, because looking at this slide here, I see words like time. I see scaffolds need to be in place. And structural planning, capacity of the system. So I see a lot of system things and structural things that might need to be present. So just quickly, what are some things that you're thinking right now are some systematic things that might prevent some of this stuff from happening? Because that's one of the other barriers, is there's some barriers just to even get to this point. It's not about the tool. It's not about the purpose. That might be all set, but there's just structural things that are preventing these things from happening. So I heard you talk about some of those. So what are some other things that you're thinking about right now that might be potential barriers to getting to a point closer to this?
Selection process. Selection process for any type of new program initiative assessment. What's your selection process right now?
Because that comes to your purpose. That's guided by the purpose. And if the purpose matters more to you, you're more likely to spend the time on it.
I know one of the things, just since I brought it up, one of the things that stands in, that I think is a barrier for us is that prior to, and this again, this isn't a me thing, this is definitely a we thing. Everything was put on the same category. Like, everything's category 5. Has to happen now. Has to be done now.
So,
and I have a lot of teachers who feel like their hand is being held to the fire for things that really should be like a 1 or a 2. Those things that should be a 5.
So have we set priorities?
Disseminating between what our priorities are and how to attack them. And then from those who lead us, understanding these are the priorities we're setting and this is why. Let me work, please.
Mike also mentioned having someone like in Margaret's role who has the time to coordinate and lead those conversations. So I'm assuming, depending on the size and capacity of your district, that's an initial
barrier
right there.
So then it's figuring out how do you get that within your current setup. I don't know what time it is, but there's the book, Building the Bridge as You Walk on It. It's a business guy, talked about building effective businesses, all this. The story always sounds really nice after you lived it and when you get to put it on a PowerPoint. In reality, it's a lot messier. And I had teachers and administrators like, what the, why are we doing this? I still have some pushback, some still people that don't understand, some building administrators that don't understand percentile rank, and it doesn't mean grade level proficiency. So it, I'm not saying systemically we are consistent in our understanding, consistent in our practice. But what this has, reflection on this has elevated for me moving forward in Farmington, a new system, is what of these things are in place, and then how can I tweak and refine, right? Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of PLCs, this is, the conversations still aren't what we want them to be. But it's a, we have to be comfortable with giving ourselves time and setting appropriate expectations for ourselves, okay? We come back to our questions here, which I think are really good questions. If you go to our bit.ly, mm-hmm. all these types of questions you can, and the link to this document yep. that you guys looked at today is available.
Right. I threw this in last night.
Take the interim assessment.
Take the interim assessment. Yeah. So just kind of,
yeah.
just know that, take these questions back, think about them, think about kind of West Bloomfield's story, think about challenges to the system you might need to encounter, some hinge points you know you're going to butt up against. And just kind of think about that. Just reassess your system.
And tomorrow, it's like, what's the first thing I can do? What I always tell new teachers after we've done a full week of new induction PD and they're overwhelmed is, what can you do tomorrow on your first day of school? That's the most important. So what can you do tomorrow? What's that first next thing from any of the learning that you do this week? Okay.
And to get some more perspective from Oakland County, we have some other kind of real-life scenarios where my colleagues Stephen Sneed and Missy and Wendy from getting a district perspective on how they're thinking about the entire system. We talked more about interim assessments, but there was talk of how that fits in your overall system. So if you want a broader conversation about the entire system and how you're working towards a more perfect assessment system, if there is such a thing, check out the session tomorrow. And I think the last slide is just the resources. So,
If I can make one more note, there is no assessment system that's perfect. Okay? I have my love and hates of NWEA, right? But a lot of my hates is when we try to use it for something it's not. So if you get yourself caught there where you're starting to hate your system, is it because you're using it for what it's not designed to? And have you reevaluated your purpose? And do you need a different tool? So a hatred or a dislike can have multiple causal categories.
Right.
And so I am more comfortable with any assessment if we're using it for the purpose it's intended.
And one of the big takeaways from one of our sessions yesterday, when we were talking about assessments, is that assessments aren't valid or invalid in themselves. It's how you use those assessments carries the validity. So it can be a completely valid assessment for very
yeah.
specific purposes, but if you're trying to use it for something it wasn't designed to do, then that's where you're going to get frustrated. You're
yeah.
going to butt up against things that aren't appropriate. So keep that in mind. So that's why purpose is so key in this process.
Yeah.
Identifying your purpose, finding the match for that purpose in the assessment, and that way you'll have it do what you hope it to do.
Okay.
I think
we're
good. So.
Sorry. Yep, we're in good shape.
Thank you.
Actually, my